everyone. It's Christina Herrick, produce editor with The Packer, here again with another Tip of the Iceberg podcast. In this episode, I talk with Allie Cox, the founder and CEO of Noble West, an agriculture marketing consultancy. And she's a fifth generation farmer, and we're here to talk about regenerative ag. Thanks for joining me, Allie.
Thanks for having me, Christina.
Yes. So let's get into it. One thing, as I've done some stories on regenerative ag, one thing I'm learning is it's kind of an ambiguous, description of a lot of different things. So, what is regenerative ag?
Yeah. I think that right now regenerative agriculture has a lot of different meanings to a lot of different people, right? And it's really industry by industry. So of course here we're talking about produce, but if you're talking about regenerative agriculture in say tree nuts or in grape growing, then it's probably going to involve livestock. Obviously that's a serious food safety violation. We would not see that necessarily in produce. But really, it's really managing the amount of inputs. It's really focused on till and a place where sustainability plays a large part into it. But really, it's in produce, it's largely till and really sort of sequestering a lot of the carbon by not over-tilling the land.
Yeah. So, you said livestock there. So, are you thinking what I'm thinking, which is like, I'm envisioning goats kind of going in and weed eating or sheep or like when you're talking about, tree nuts and that's part of our market too. What do you mean by livestock? I'm just kind of curious.
Well, the truth is if you are, and I'm very familiar with almonds, given that we're in the Central Valley. So if you're an almond farmer and you are, you want to grow regeneratively, a great example of a fabulous family owned business called Burroughs Family Farm, within overnight, they didn't just become almond farmers. They also became like sheep farmers and had to learn how to, create barriers. They're doing mobile fencing, working with sheep herders, understanding how to take care of the dogs that kind of manage it. So it's definitely a more involved process. But I think what we're seeing is it's also allowing cover crops to flourish. It is allowing, grazing, less mowing. It's easy, it's really just about managing kind of the timeline. And I think there's, of course, food safety, I think is one of the main things you have to be careful about. And that's where I think it's something like 90 days in advance of harvest is like when you have to make sure the animals are out. But that is really, that's true regenerative farming.
That's really interesting. That's kind of what I was thinking. As you were also talking, I was thinking about this time I was in an orchard in New Zealand and I thought I was losing my mind. I thought I was hallucinating because there was a peacock. There were peacocks in the orchard, but they were there for pest control. And it makes sense, but it just was, I don't know. An apple orchard in New Zealand was like one of the last places I thought I'd actually see a peacock. So, but you're right. There's a lot of interesting things that growers are doing to take kind of natural practices and already established practices and incorporate them in. So that leads to my next question, which, and kind of I prepped you on, the Packer kind of covers the full spectrum of the produce industry. So, I understand kind of where growers are with understanding regenerative ag, but, talk about the rest of the spectrum, like packers, shippers, retailers, what do they need to know and why should they pay attention to regenerative ag?
Yeah. Well, I think it's kind of important to note that regenerative ag and produce is really, really in the nascent stages. There are a few different companies, like I know Braga has a few test plots in regeneratively grown produce. I know Taylor Farms is looking at some regenerative, but really it's at the test plot level. There hasn't really been a consumer brand, to my knowledge, that has been sold as regeneratively grown and packed produce. And when we're talking about produce, we're really talking about tilling. So we're not going to get away from tilling. I don't think that this is going to be like, you know, in the Midwest, regenerative farming is much farther along because there's really only 6 to 7 key crops with corn, sorghum, wheat, barley, et cetera. But in produce, it's really about sort of decreasing the amount of tilling. So really, if you typically go through and you'll rip the soil, like, you know, 2 to 3 feet, here it's sort of like, how can we do that? And I think right now we're seeing a lot of testing done with like how many inches is really necessary so that we can decrease the amount of tillage.
That's really interesting. And you're right. You know, obviously, given the broad spectrum of produce, it kind of complicates regenerative ag practices because everything's grown just a little bit differently. Everything has just a little bit of different needs, different timing. So that just takes the regenerative ag umbrella and just, you know, doubles, triples, quadruples.
Well, and everything. The other thing is, remember, regenerative ag doesn't necessarily mean organic. So those are two different farming practices. Now, I think the ROC certification or regenerative organic certification, that is picking up a lot of steam, and we're seeing a lot more like diversity of farmer types and products who want to become ROC certified. Now, with everything, you know, I'm a marketer and I care a lot about like closing the gap between farmer information and also consumer insights. And right now, I just think there's a big, humongous ocean between what consumers want out of their food and the, you know, how they value their food. And then also what farmers understand, like consumers. So, that, you know, what do I plant? What is like the best crop? What do I rotate? What should be my rotational crop be? And there's a lot of an ocean between that knowledge. And that's where, like, if we're going to see the ROC certification continue to flourish, we're going to need to understand how well they educate consumers. Do consumers understand and value that certification? Do they understand what they're paying for and why is their lettuce, for example, maybe 2 to 3 times more expensive? But you know what? If that's their value chain, then that's okay. But really, we see what we've always seen in a lot of our clients see is just there are so many certifications out there and having a hard time prioritizing and also continuing to make the millions and thousands of dollars of on-farm changes to appease some of these certifications that aren't must-haves, but more kind of nice-to-haves. And that's where, you know, we really work with our clients to help them understand if they're going to make that decision, those are business choices, but how are they going to be paid for that? And how are they going to get an ROI on that? That's the compensation model that I think that this entire industry is really trying to work through right now.
Well, you bring up a good point that kind of leads to my next question, which, and actually 2 points. So first, you know, you kind of alluded to this already, but you know, as you said, regenerative ag is kind of sometimes misconstrued with organic or sustainable, mm-hmm. you know, they're kind of all locked together in some ways. So, mm-hmm. you know, what are some other practices? And like you said, there's tillage and things like that. So what are some practices growers are already doing that would be considered regenerative ag that they might not even be thinking that they're doing?
I think really probably lessening their till. And really thinking about if something needs to be tilled. That's probably the number one. Probably also thinking about soil health and what kind of probiotics are going into their soil. How healthy is their soil? What do their soil pathogens look like? And really, I think taking a real science. And what I really dislike is when we make the assumption that farmers and ranchers don't care about their soil and their soil health, even if they're farming conventionally. It just like really grates on me because they care more about it than anybody else because it's their whole livelihood. But I think we're really looking at soil health. We're looking at tilling. We're looking at carbon sequestration. We're looking at probiotics. And then we're, you know, also, and I think that we really need to think about this like industry by industry. Because like, for example, in almonds and blueberries, for example, we're really going to be looking at bee health and hive health. Whereas maybe we're not going to see those pollination needs in other sites, parts of the industry.
That's a really good point. And, you know, I do think the conversation around soil health is changing. I've been in the produce industry. I was in the produce industry, left, came back. And I know toward the tail end of, like, you know, that first go around, soil health was becoming a huge issue and a huge, I don't want to say issue, a huge topic, because I think people recognize just, you know, the need. And I think you're right. I think that's going to continue. And it was already something that growers cared about, but I do think it's becoming a bigger focus just because of the impacts that soil health can have on the overall plant yield, all of that. So yeah. It is interesting to see that.
But Christina, I think that it's important to really note that a lot of farmers who, even if they are farming conventionally, they're really great farmers, right? Okay. And they also have different metrics. And I've been really following closely, like, just really sustainability in the produce industry, you know, and what is driving a lot of on-farm changes, which might to some farmers seem like real pain in the neck, but probably better for the overall, is, you know, like Walmart Project Gigatron. That's a 104-point checkpoint where, like, actual farms and brands and grower packer shippers are getting certified so that they can sell into Walmart. That's an example of, like, one of the world's largest retailers, if not the largest, making sort of those claims, like, listen, we care about sustainability, and whether that's regenerative or organic or just really great sustainable farming, even if there's conventional methods used, like, we're putting more of a value on this. And we also think that this is what our consumers want, because otherwise we wouldn't be doing it. And we're seeing that across Kroger. We're seeing that across Publix. We're seeing that across, and again, but Project Gigatron is really the front runner.
That's really interesting. So, you know, you talked earlier about consumers and kind of consumers' role in regenerative ag. I think I know the answer to this, but, you know, how informed are consumers about regenerative ag, you know, and or is it kind of like what you said, where it's a little like thought it's kind of organic, think it's something else, you know, don't really know, you know, where are consumers with that?
Yeah, I wish I could give you a more finite answer. And honestly, Noble, this is an area that Noble West is really, we're funding a survey so that we can get a lot more detail on this. I have, like, anecdotally can tell you that I've done some short-term survey, like some small surveys that are just really more qualitative. Some people think regenerative is somewhat medicinal. Some people think that regenerative is like bad. So there's definitely different insights that we have through our social listening tools, but I think that there's just general lack of awareness. And the reason why that makes me really frustrated is because in many cases we're expecting farmers to adapt to the future, but that future is not, it's not predictable. It's not predictive return on investment. And that is the hardest thing.
Yeah, you know, and I'd love to, you know, either have you back on the podcast or speak with you once you have the survey results in, and obviously once you're ready to share it with the general public. I'd love to hear about it, because I do think that is definitely a big challenge to sustainability efforts overall, not just regenerative ag, is that understanding of what that means to the person that's ending up buying the produce. Mm-hmm. You know, because I do think it's important that Walmart, it's important that major retailers are driving this, because that's obviously where a lot of that change is going to come from. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's got to be something that consumers understand and see a benefit to in order for this to actually, you know, move forward. So,
but, you know, speaking of Project Gigatron, we don't do work in this area. Yeah. However, some of our clients are Project Gigatron certified. So I understand, like, we try to tell those stories to the best of our ability. But it involves waste. It involves byproduct use. It involves on-farm technology. It involves the adaptation of food software, like food system software. Labor, how socially responsible you are with your farm workers. I mean, your packaging recycling, it is very, very extensive. And I always say, I can't believe I'm saying this, but probably if sustainability is one of the core tenets of what you care about, Walmart's probably the safest place to get your produce that align with your value. And that really just kind of blows my mind that I'm actually saying that out loud, but I am.
Well, you know, that's, I did a story on food safety. And you know, that's, it's kind of a similar conversation that these major retailers are going to be the ones that are pushing that food safety focus and requirements to the nth degree. And, you know, they can, you know, when you've got a large buying power like Walmart or Kroger, any of these retailers, you know, they've got that ability to stand by those, I don't want to say mandates, that's not the right word, but yeah, you know, those requirements.
Yeah. I mean, and what I really just care about is, I think that's all well and good from a large grower, packer, shipper. Now the smaller guys, can they do that? No, they probably can't afford to do it. And are they going to get the ROI? Probably not. So that's where I think that, like, we have to be really, really ready. We got to be ready for a lot of these grower, packer, shippers to go out of business because they just can't compete at that level necessarily.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm probably blissfully optimistic in that I think, you know, obviously there's certain things that large grower, packers and shippers can do that smaller ones can't. But my hope is that some of these solutions, some of these strategies, some of these plans are, they're going to figure it out on a bigger level and it's going to trickle down in some way, shape or form. So that's kind of what I hold on to, is that, you know, there's some hope that some of this will get figured out and, you know, like I said, impact those smaller growers in the future. Mm-hmm. You know, I know you already talked about this as kind of the future of regenerative ag, but I always love asking that question because it is such a challenging question to answer, to look into your crystal ball and kind of see where things are going. But, you know, what do you see happening in the future of regenerative ag? Is it going to be more education? Is it going to be more restrictions or more, you know, where is it going, I guess?
Well, I think that there's lots of talk in kind of all of the industry events that I go to that, man, we got to be really careful that regenerative doesn't go the way of organic, or it doesn't go the way of food safety or whatnot, because, you know, I'd argue that food safety has been the culprit of quite a bit of food loss and a lot of food waste. And that's a place where I think that we're just shooting ourselves in the foot, quite frankly. But I do think that the more we over-legislate this and the more we over-certify it without putting the consumer first, we will continue to have these problems. And that's where the industry driving change is really important. But really, you got to make sure that your food brands and you got to make sure your retailers and everybody's on board. Otherwise, I just don't see a very positive path for farmers, quite frankly.
No, that you bring up a very good thought in that, you know, food waste is definitely something the produce industry has to tackle. I know it's something that, you know, is thought of, but, you know, you're right. It's got to be a part of the future. And, you know, all of these ideas for regenerative ag and plants and proposals need to be something that, you know, is something that farms can implement and not be too onerous or too burdensome, because there's, as you said, there's already going to be a lot of requirements with food safety. There's already some requirements with other things coming down the pike. So, you know, it's got to be something that makes sense.
You know, Christina, an area that we're working in, though, that with a client that I'm super excited about is an upcycling. So upcycling meaning that we're taking imperfect fruit, or we call it the unseen harvest, the harvest that is left behind. And it either is probably now going to Kohl's or to, you know, cow feed or pig feed or whatnot, or silage of some sort. We're actually taking that piece of fruit. We're actually harvesting, we're paying the farmer for it, and upcycling it into fruits, essences, concentrates, purees, oils. And that is an area where I think that farmers today don't necessarily think first, but that is a place where I think we're going to continue to see demand. I just saw there's a lot of collaborations across fashion designers, and I think that in cosmetics and, you know, whatnot, but I think that's what I'm most excited about, is that we're seeing multiple uses and not just the traditional use. And that is through upcycling. So, you know, obviously regenerative and upcycling are not the same thing. However, they all are sort of climate forward and hopefully are seen as additional opportunities for farmers and not just, you know, like they're doing the wrong thing, and more so like, oh, actually we're creating opportunity out of more, you know, less is more.
That's great. And, you know, I like that you kind of mentioned that it's hand in hand. It's not, you know, it's not necessarily a subset of regenerative ag, but I do think that has to be part of it. The industry has to come to terms with food waste. And so upcycling is definitely something that's of interest. I follow Jenny Britton Bauer. She was the founder of Jenny's Ice Cream, and she just launched a new company that's looking to kind of take some of that food and upcycle, like watermelon rinds that, you know, most people would throw away. Instead of it going to compost, it would actually go into a food product in the future. So it's a really interesting time. Well, that's all the questions I had. So, you know, is there anything else about regenerative ag that I didn't ask you about that you want to share or didn't think to ask you?
Yeah, I mean, I think that just the most important thing is it's just really regenerative agriculture, particularly in produce, is really in its infancy. And I think that we're going to see a lot of different variations of regenerative ag. And most grower, packer, shippers, if they're interested in this, they are trialing it. And I think that a lot of those trials are becoming really obvious ways for to increase your water aquifer. We're seeing cover crops thrive, which means that you're withholding more of your irrigation. So I think that we're seeing some improvements, but it's really mostly at a small level at the moment. And if consumers are interested in it, that's where I think they should get more involved and really voice their opinions through social media and really demand that. And if consumers make those appeals and those demands to, quite frankly, their retailers, their local grocery stores, and that gets elevated enough, that is where we're going to see change, because that will be demand, right? And then we can grow the supply. But at the moment, I think we're putting a lot of pressure on farmers just to make changes and think about a lot, you know, like I said, millions of dollars of on-farm changes without even securing their revenue source and doing it on spec. And that's just where I think, like, we've just got to say no for farmers, because that's just too expensive.
That makes sense. And I think, you know, are there ways that farmers can get involved too? You know, they're interested in regenerative ag. What are some ways that our listeners and viewers can also, you know, get involved?
Yeah, I think that if a farmer, particularly in produce, is interested, they should start following their Organic Produce Summit through Western Growers. That's where I've learned a lot of information about the future of it. There's, again, lots of straddling conversations between organic and regenerative. I think the ROC certification, regenerative organic certification, they provide a lot of information. The CCOF, which is the organic certified, the Organic Federation, they provide a lot of information and probably and a little bit of regenerative focused, but it's really not the same thing. But there's definitely sort of like close cousins as far as understanding it, kind of where to learn information.
That's great. Well, thank you for that. You know, I thought it, as you were talking about consumers, I thought, well, we've got a lot of listeners too that probably want to know what they can do if they don't already, you know, have places to go for information. So thank you for sharing that. Well, I just want to say a huge thank you to Allie Cox of Noble West for joining me today. Thank you so much, Allie.
Thanks for having me, Christina. And best of luck to all of your listeners out there. They're doing a great job, and I couldn't be more proud to be part of the U.S. food system.
Yeah, well, this was a great conversation. And if I'm thanking people, I also want to thank the listeners for tuning in. And don't forget, if you like what you hear or see, you can catch new episodes of Tip of the Iceberg on your favorite podcast platform like Google Play, Apple, and Spotify, and more. And that's a wrap for this edition of Tip of the Iceberg, brought to you by The Packer, Produce Market Guide, and Farm Journal. Join us again for more industry insights.